potential abuses of power and improper actions is really, I think, what we're looking at.
Lawmakers approve an investigation into the firing of Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 28th of July. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an FAA report on LAB flying service details a callous disregard for passenger safety.
You can get fined, you can get suspended, and then you get revoked. And they chose to go for revocation because of the seriousness of this.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the Alaska Railroad Corporation, with daily rail service to Seward, Whittier, Anchorage, Talkeetna, Denali Park, and Fairbanks through mid-September. Information available at AlaskaRailroad.com.
The Legislative Council today ordered an outside investigation into the firing of former Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monaghan and the possible abuse of administrative authority that led to his dismissal. The Council will have to decide whether to refer the report of the investigation to other legislative committees if any action is needed. Senate Judiciary Chairman Hollis French said the investigation will be kept under wraps until the Council sees it.
Let's just play it out a little bit. We're going to hire an investigator. We're going to turn that person loose. That person's going to have the ability to gather evidence and, if necessary, come back to a joint House and Senate Judiciary Committee for the issuance of subpoenas. Some people just won't talk without a subpoena. At the end of that process, that person's going to write a report, and I think the report's going to take, you know, one of three forms. No evidence of wrongdoing, some evidence of wrongdoing, clear evidence of wrongdoing. That'll come back to us, to your committee. And at that point, the body has to make a decision, much like a district attorney makes a decision. Is this evidence strong enough to proceed on or not?
House Speaker John Harris said there's only one aspect of the investigation that interests him, since there's no question that the governor had the right to fire the commissioner.
Potential abuses of power and improper actions is really, I think, what we're looking at, or at least proposing to look at, not the termination of the commissioner. Certainly, in my view, that's what we're looking at, because I'd be the first one to say that the governor has every authority to terminate their commissioners that, for whatever reason, they want to. And I wouldn't look at that at all. It's just, are there abuses of power that may have occurred above and beyond that termination?
French, a former state prosecutor, will direct the investigation and may spend up to $100,000 for a private investigator to make inquiries. There is no deadline for the report, although members of the council say they would like it as quickly as possible. Monaghan's replacement, Public Safety Commissioner Chuck Kopp, appointed 2 weeks ago, resigned from office Friday night following several lengthy meetings with Governor Palin.
The Department of Public Safety employees represent the very finest of Alaskans, and the recent media firestorm has been detrimental to the Department of Public Safety mission, the citizens of Alaska, and my family. This has caused me to be unable to bring my full focus to the mission of this department that the welfare of so many Alaskans depend on.
Kopp is the former chief of the Kenai Police Department. Thursday, Governor Palin said she didn't know when she appointed him that he had been reprimanded by the city following a sexual harassment complaint. Friday night, she said his resignation is in the best interest of Alaska, promising new steps to build up the department.
His recognition, though, that this situation, the detraction, prohibits giving full attention to public safety at this time, I respect that, and I respect his decision. And I respect his desire to protect his family from further stress.
After making brief statements, neither Kopp nor the governor accepted questions. A Federal Aviation Administration report says LAB Flying Service lacks the care, judgment, and responsibility required to hold an air carrier certificate. The 28-page report released after the FAA grounded the Southeast air carrier last week indicates all LAB planes were in deplorable condition. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
The detailed account shows a history of shoddy maintenance and inspections, improperly installed parts, poorly kept, and even falsified records. In short, LAB continued to operate on airworthy aircraft. FAA Alaska Counsel Howard L. Martin Jr. sets out seven counts against the company. Each count specifies problems with particular aircraft since 2006, but Martin states that LAB has failed to comply with federal regulations for at least the last 8 years. He cites five instances in 2002 and 2003 of things breaking or falling off aircraft during flight. Investigation of those incidents led to additional violations. Martin's report is written like it was the last straw. Indeed, it was, according to FAA Western Region spokesman Alan Kennitzer. He says FAA inspectors chose an emergency revocation because it's the most severe penalty the agency can impose on a carrier.
You can get fined, you can get suspended, and then you get revoked. And they chose to go for revocation because of the seriousness of this.
Company officials maintained their license revocation was totally unexpected. But the report indicates the federal agency over the years has imposed fines in varying amounts against LAB for maintenance and safety violations. A $50,000 penalty in 2004 was partially forgiven because of assurances from the company that it would correct the problems and prevent future ones. According to the FAA report, LAB has not taken effective steps to correct its maintenance practices and procedures. Take, for example, counts 5 and 6 of the emergency order of revocation, referencing planes that did not pass the June FAA inspection. The counts list, among other things, incorrectly installed and severely worn brake discs, deep grooves in tire sidewalls, cut by brake calipers, many loose or missing rivets, an engine exhaust shield ready to fall off, engine leaks, leaking fuel tanks, corrosion, wing cracks, bolts missing that hold a wing to the fuselage. In June of last year, a fire was discovered in a Piper Cherokee 6 shortly after takeoff from Cake. The pilot returned, landed safely, and everyone got out moments before the fire destroyed the plane. The National Transportation Safety Board determined the fire was caused by a leaking exhaust system. The blaze burned a hole in the steel firewall, deformed the engine mounts, and scorched the propeller. That indicates the temperatures in the fire exceeded 2,000 degrees, according to the report. 2 months ago, FAA inspectors discovered the same engine bolted onto another aircraft. LAB personnel confirmed they intended to return the engine to service, though they didn't know the extent of the fire damage. FAA attorney Martin says the attempted use of the engine demonstrates a callous disregard for the safety of others. LAB has appealed the revocation of its license. The FAA is expected to respond to that appeal by the close of business today. Then the National Transportation Safety Board will take up the case. LAB cannot apply to the FAA for a new operating certificate for at least 1 year. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Brigadier General Thomas Tinsley was declared dead last night at 10:30 following an apparent self-inflicted gunshot wound to his chest. It's unclear whether the shooting was accidental or a suicide. Tinsley was the 3rd Wing Commander at Elmendorf Air Force Base near Anchorage since May of 2007. Colonel Richard Wahlberg told reporters today that he lives across the street from the Tinsley family.
About 10 o'clock last night, I went up to bed. My wife and I were going to rack in for the night. About 10:10, maybe 10:15, I don't know exactly, I got a call from command post. The individual on the end of the line was fairly agitated and said, there's a report of a gunshot at General Tinsley's house and people are screaming. At that point, I came flying out of my house. My wife was right behind me. I ran across the street. The fire department wasn't there yet, but they were coming. And when I got into the house, Dr. Eli Powell, the 3rd Medical Group commander who was standing next to me, was in the house.
Wahlberg said there did not appear to be a note. He said General Tinsley had a demanding job but was not under any undue stress. Tinsley wasn't deployed to Iraq during his tenure in Alaska. Wahlberg says Tinsley's most notable accomplishment was his love of the airmen under his command.
His first thought in the morning, his last thought at night for his professional family was, how can I better take care of these airmen who are being sent into harm's way? What can I do to help in an ever-shrinking resource environment in the United States Air Force? That is his best tribute.
Air Force Institute of Pathology investigators are en route to Alaska and will make the final determination about his death. General Tinsley is survived by his wife and college-aged daughter, both of whom were in the home at the time of his death. He was also the legal guardian of his teenage nephew. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, erupting Okmok volcano is preventing important supplies from reaching Nikolski.
To me, I think it's affecting them because of we need to have medication out there. A lot of people are running low on their meds.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, helping customers get to the next stage through banking, loans, and retirement planning. Wells Fargo, the next stage. And by Chariot Group, an authorized Polycom partner featuring HD conferencing solutions from its new conference center in Anchorage. Information at chariotgroup.com.
Former Governors Wally Hickle and Tony Knowles today told the state Senate the same thing. Vote no on Governor Palin's proposal to allow TransCanada to develop the natural gas pipeline to North American markets. Hickle has taken the lead on support for an all-Alaskan gas line to Valdez, where it would be liquefied for transport to markets by ship. He told the Energy Committee they are about to make the most important vote of their political careers.
Remember who you are. Remember where you are. This is Alaska, and don't sell us out. Ask yourself, what is best for Alaska? If you do, you'll vote no on the TransCanada license, and you will say yes on an all-Alaskan gas line. Your vote can have an immediate and positive impact on our economy and our future.
He said if the line goes through Canada, there will be delays in providing gas to Alaska users and will limit the markets available. Besides testifying at the committee, Governor Knowles visited senators in their offices throughout the day. He says he was carrying the message of state sovereignty and how the TransCanada license negates the state's real role, which is to negotiate a successful project. He said the price of gas has created interest in the line and the Palin approach could hinder the state's success.
I think there's a much better way that the state can, by developing a common-sense, long-range business plan that reflects the extraordinary market forces that are now in effect to build a pipeline and representing Alaska's best interests, can really bring the project together. And that is our proper role, rather than picking a winner, dividing up the support that is necessary to get a pipeline done.
The House has already authorized the license, and under the statute enabling the project, the Senate must ratify it by Saturday night, or it will be considered disapproved. Spending is skyrocketing on the campaign over ballot measure 4, the water quality initiative that would set tougher pollution standards for large new mines. Prior to the 30-day deadline, opponents reported about $8 million in contributions, while the advocates had raised less than $1 million. APRN's Steve Heimel reports.
The mining industry contributes to a group known as the Council of Alaska Producers. More than half of their $8 million comes from the Pebble Limited Partnership, which wants to build the mine north of Lake Iliamna. Fairbanks Gold Mining Incorporated and Donlin Creek Company have put in $1 million each. Kennecott Greens Creek and its partners account for more than $1 million, and Tech Pogo and Tech Cominco put in $400,000 apiece. As of July 16th, the council had funneled something more than $3 million to Alaskans against the mining shutdown. Additionally, and on its own, the Nana Native Corporation has spent about $95,000 on an independent campaign against Ballot Measure 4. Campaigning for the ballot measure is Alaskans for Clean Water. Prior to the 30-day report, which is due shortly, it reported $955,000 in contributions, $750,000 of which is coming from the national right-wing advocacy organization Americans for Job Security. Lodge owners and financial manager Bob Gillum account for $30,000, and the Alaska Conservation Foundation put in a couple of thousand. So far, the Renewable Resources Coalition, an organization formed to oppose the Pebble Mine, has given $150,000 to Alaskans for Clean Water. Indications are that there will be plenty more spending before the issue is decided in the August 26th primary election. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
The Aleutian village of Nikolski is just west of Okmok volcano, which has been erupting for more than 2 weeks. Ash from the volcano has prevented any planes from reaching the village, leaving many stranded until now. KIAL's Ann Hillman has the story.
After almost 3 weeks of trying, residents and visitors were finally able to leave Nikolsky. Yesterday, the processing vessel Lady Goodney picked up 10 people from the village of 30. The ship was returning to Unalaska from the islands of the Four Mountains. Captain Christian Flaxfoss only accepted smoked salmon as payment.
Yeah, there was no way I could not do it. And I was there, so hey, the more the merrier. We have one-third of the whole city on the boat.
One of the passengers was Grace Amudik, the health aide who was 8 months pregnant. She says usually people can be medevaced out, but she's not sure what emergency plan would be in place in this situation, where planes can't reach the island because of the ash. Passenger Julia Dushkin emphasized how much an emergency plan is needed.
To me, I think it's affecting them because of we need to have medication out there. A lot of people are running low on their meds.
They haven't gotten mail or freight or fresh food in 3 weeks either. Dushkin says she had tried to leave the island on a different boat, but the owner wouldn't take the passengers because of insurance reasons. Angela LeClaire from Anchorage was stranded in Nikolsky for 3 weeks. She had initially only planned to go for 4 days for work.
Well, I feel like I've just spent a big part of my summer in Nikolsky, so that was a factor in that, and I didn't have my daughter with me, so I had to, she was covered, but I just, you know, not being there and not being able to take care of her was a kind of a big deal for me.
Tina Neal, a volcanologist from the Alaska Volcano Observatory, says activity on Okmok has slowed since the initial eruption, but it's still sending ash as high as 20,000 feet into the air.
But I guess the summary is that it's still erupting, it's still in a highly unstable state, and shows no sign of stopping.
Okmok last erupted in 1997. Another volcano, Mount Cleveland, further down the Aleutian Chain, is also currently erupting. It is unclear when planes will return again to Nikolsky. In Unalaska, I'm Ann Hillman.
A social, economic, and environmental impact statement says the Army favors a troop increase for Alaska. U.S. Army Environmental Command spokesman Bob DeMichael says the study looked at ways of growing and realigning forces and associated impacts in the Pacific Theater, which includes Hawaii and Alaska.
In our preferred alternative, basically we would end up stationing another approximately 2,200 soldiers in Alaska. Approximately 1,800 additional soldiers for Fort Richardson and another 425 at Fort Wainwright.
Another 2,000 soldiers would be stationed in Hawaii, DeMichael says. There are various types of units that could make up the additional forces.
They'd include this maneuver enhancement brigade, an artillery brigade, or a combat aviation brigade. And in addition, there are a number of units like small engineering units or military police units, combat support units, that would be added into the mix in small numbers.
DeMichael says the troop movement would occur from later this year until 2013. He says the study released last week assessed impacts on air and water quality, traffic, and transportation facilities. A final decision on the growth and realignment of Pacific forces is expected by the end of August.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Alaska Airlines customers will soon have to burn more miles in order to qualify for free tickets offered through the airline's Frequent Flyer Awards program. As KRBD's Deanna Garrison reports, Alaska Airlines says high fuel prices are behind the change.
As it stands now, customers can qualify for a round-trip ticket on Alaska Airlines anywhere within the continental U.S. and Alaska for as little as 20,000 miles with what is called a Coach Saver Award. Rick Rasmussen oversees the frequent flyer program for Alaska Airlines. Come November, he says it will take 25,000 miles to obtain the same award, which will be renamed a Super Saver Award.
And that puts that at parity with many of the major programs who have been at 25,000 miles for many years. When we originally started that award, fuel was very inexpensive and we had low cost. And we were also only flying along the west coast of the United States and up into Alaska. In the years since, we've also expanded our network across the United States, and there was a lot of pressure to raise award levels accordingly.
Customers can currently qualify for a peak award, which allows more flexibility with 40,000 miles. That award level is being renamed the Full Flex Award and will require 55,000 miles. Rasmussen says the airline is creating a new mid-level award called a Choice Award at the 40,000-mile level.
basically, you can now, if you can't find a Sabre award, you have this middle choice award level that has significantly more coach fare availability that is less miles than the peak award. So you have something positioned in the middle.
The airline will also institute a new $25 fee for each award booked on a partner airline. There will continue to be no award fee or fuel surcharge for award travel on Alaska Airlines or Horizon Air. And customers who take advantage of the company's 50% discount of up to $250 for 15,000 miles round trip will no longer be allowed to accumulate mileage for that ticket. Rasmussen says high fuel prices are behind the changes. He says the airline is not looking to reduce the number of award tickets it issues each year.
It's for us to be able to burn off more miles from the books because we carry that all as a liability. And you know, the more miles that we burn off, the more cost savings we have. In fact, we'd like to have more people flying on awards, but it's just to increase the number of miles that we're able to burn off the books, which helps our economics.
Rasmussen says the airline issued over 1 million award tickets last year alone. He says around 10% of passengers on any given Alaska Airlines flight are flying on awards. The new changes take effect for mileage plan awards redeemed on or after November 1st. In Ketchikan, I'm Deanna Garrison.
Matanuska Valley Emergency Medical Services folks got a shot at the big time last week when a National Guard Pavehawk rescue helicopter dropped in on their training class. As APRN's Ellen Lockyer reports, it's all part of a rigorous schedule for those who provide emergency care on the ground and in the air.
Because you're in an environment with noise, vibration, heat, cold, altitude problems, which is essentially hypoxia.
The Palmer class, about 15 professional and volunteer emergency services providers, was there to fulfill state certification requirements. The training was focused on in-flight patient care. Instructor Bill McCreth has been a full-time Matsu Borough Emergency Services staffer for 17 years.
In the majority of the state, air is the only route to go to a hospital. In the great majority of the state, there is no road to take to tertiary care. So even minor problems are medevaced. In the Matsu Borough, we're lucky enough to have a dedicated medevac resource available to us out of Anchorage. But occasionally it happens that we have a patient so critical, an air transport is appropriate, and we call and find out that lifeguard is already busy on another emergency.
McGrath says emergency medevac by air has grown dramatically during the past decade, and emergency services technicians are required to learn the difficulties of taking care of a patient in a fixed-wing aircraft or a helicopter.
So the bigger focus of this class is what to do when you're the one trying to give medical care in flight in an aircraft you've never been in before.
One of those strange aircraft could be a National Guard Pavehawk helicopter, the kind used in difficult rescue missions in war or in peacetime. The National Guard crew obligingly visited almost on cue, landing on the Palmer Airport tarmac. After landing, the guardsmen gave a few pointers on how to behave around the helicopter and told the trainees what to expect when accompanying a patient inside one of the huge aircraft.
You'll go onto the aircraft. You're not going up, but see what it's like. You got a stethoscope?
Yep.
See what it's like to listen to breath sounds.
Trainees did not go aloft this trip, but the guardsmen fired up the rotors. And in groups of three, the trainees got a taste of what it is like to work under stressful conditions. Linda Bailey is a paid on-call responder with Big Lake Meadow Lakes Fire District 2.
The noise in there is extreme. Unable to hear blood pressures, lung sounds are real minimal. Could still feel a good pulse even despite the vibrations, and there's a lot of vibrations in there. So it's a lot more difficult than the back of the ambulance.
McGrath says medics need to be able to load patients safely into an aircraft that will provide unusual working conditions, such as vibrations, turbulence, humidity, and cramped quarters.
They'll need to understand the stressors of flight, not just on the patient, but on the medics, and how to prepare for those stressors so that they're not as greatly affected by them.
The 16-hour course deals with many aspects of medevac flights, not the least of which is the medic's personal in-flight safety.
We hammer away at the topic of safety. In an effort to reduce all those risks that are within our scope to reduce.
McGrath says emergency responders are under increasing pressure as the valley continues to grow.
The population growth in the smaller communities has not been matched by a growth in the number of people who come forward to join ambulance services. The same core group of people are getting busier and more stressed.
These emergency responders are special, he says, because not only did they step up to the plate, they are taking extra classes above their basic training to make sure they are extra prepared. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
This year's wildfire season in Alaska is so far one of the mellowest on record. 79,000 acres have burned, the lowest total through the month of July for the last 10 years. The second lowest was in 1998 when 120,000 acres burned. Division of Forestry spokeswoman Maggie Rogers says conditions this summer just haven't been conducive to burning.
It just so happens we've had precipitation and generally cooler, moister weather throughout the state, throughout the summer, that's really prevented the significant fire activity.
Rogers says the way the weather has been, there may not be significantly more acreage burned through the end of the season. If that holds true, 2008 would be the fourth lowest total since 1980. This summer's slow fire season has resulted in a lot of Alaska fire crews being deployed south. Rogers says more than 500 Alaska crewmen are currently working lower 48 fires.
Usually when we're done with our season here in Alaska, we do send large numbers of people from Alaska down to the lower 48, and we certainly started sending people early this year, especially the emergency firefighter crews. They started leaving much earlier than is normal.
Rogers says many of Alaska's firefighting aircraft have also been sent south. She says two water scooper planes departed earlier this week, but two retardant tankers remain in state. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We'd love to hear your comments about the show. To send us your thoughts, go to APRN.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page, and click on the Contact Us link. Be sure to tell us if we can use your comments on the air, and if so, how to pronounce your name. We had reports tonight from Rosemary Alexander in Juneau, Ann Hillman in Unalaska, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Andy Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. Our intern is Eli Menneker. John Profit is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the new AT&T, your world delivered,
and by
GrantStation, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. GrantStation, fast track to funding, on the web at grantstation.com.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.